This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering.
Now it is crystal clear that we have the authority to do what it is that we did. We will continue to do so. And there will be no indication whatsoever in this man's life that this ever occurred, because it never should have.
That's Suffolk County District Attorney Rachel Rollins, speaking just a little while ago after a justice of the state's highest court ruled in her favor. Her office had asked the High Court to overrule Boston Municipal Court Judge Richard Sinnott over one of his decisions last week. When prosecutors tried to drop cases against some people arrested while protesting the so-called Straight Pride Parade, Judge Sinnott refused to do so. In a ruling today, Supreme Judicial Court Justice Frank Gaziano sided with Rollins, writing, quote, "The prosecutor's sole authority to determine which cases to prosecute and when not to pursue a prosecution has been affirmed repeatedly by this court since the beginning of the 19th century," end quote. We've reached out to Judge Sinnott. He's declined to comment, but joining us on the line now is Suffolk County District Attorney Rachel Rollins. D.A. Rollins, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Thanks. I was just here, a couple hours ago?
Yeah, we've got to do it again because we've got news since the last
time we talked. We did, yeah.
That's right. So the news is that the SJC ruled in your favor. You had this emergency petition to instruct the lower court to uphold your decision not to prosecute one of the protesters from last month's Straight Pride Parade. How do you feel about this victory?
It feels good, obviously, to be affirmed, but for people who practice in criminal court, this is not a surprise. As said by Justice Gaziano, this is what prosecutors do every single day, is to decide, use our discretion, right? We're elected to do so, and we've been doing it since the beginning of the 19th century, and the case he cited was from 1806. So that's the case we cited in our brief, and we're happy that now it is incredibly crystal clear to everyone that we have the power to do this, and we're going to continue to do so.
So you say it's crystal clear. Does this then cover the other cases that you wanted dismissed from the arrest from the protesters of the Straight Pride Parade?
So what we're going to do is we're going to go back and look at every single sort of encounter that happened with this judge and others. There was at least one other judge involved in some of the 36 individuals. And so we're going to look at, did we ask for a null pros and it was denied, or did we ask the judge to dismiss the case on, let's say, hypothetically, 8 hours of community service? The judge said no, and then we asked for a null pros and it was denied. Or whether, what each of the circumstances are. There are different buckets, and we're going to make sure that everything is consistent with our authority to determine who we want to prosecute and who we don't. So there might be a couple other cases that fall into this as well.
And for our listeners' understanding, a null pros stands for nulla prosequi, right? Which is basically, we do not want to prosecute this. Is that correct?
Absolutely. Right. And just remember, what was proposed here is, essentially a judge abusing their limited discretion. A judge is like a referee in the courtroom. And so null proses are, we enter them. We don't even file them. We enter them. There's not, the wording sounds awkward because the judge doesn't even get to admit or deny or grant or deny what we're doing. It's our exclusive power to determine who we want to prosecute or not and how we want to allocate our limited resources. So I think the brief was incredibly well written. I want to make sure I give appropriate thanks to my general counsel, Donna Padalano, and I think the supervisor of the Central Division of the Boston Municipal Court, Jessica Erickson. They both of them were with me at the press conference, did an exceptional job. She was unflappable, made a really great record, making it clear why we were taking the position that we were. And then what the judge had tried to do was argue that he was denying it because we failed to notify victims, and Justice Gaziano just eviscerated that argument, right? Number one, disorderly conduct, it's an offense against the public, there is no victim. And then he went so far as to say, and even if there was a victim of an offense who the prosecutor hadn't notified, the judge had no authority to deny the Commonwealth's entry of a null pros. So this is crystal clear this judge, and, you know, I would go so far as to, he's worked in the Suffolk County DA's office before. It's a complete abuse of discretion. We're happy that Justice Gaziano very quickly determined that. Now we can get back to doing the important work of what we're doing.
So you just referred to it as a complete abuse of discretion, and it seems it's hard not to read the finding as a rebuke of Judge Sinnott. Will there be consequences for him as a result of this finding?
Well, I think that's interesting. It's, you know, I made it clear I don't have any intention of filing any, you know, complaints against Judge Sinnott. When I have a disagreement, or this office has a disagreement with either the government or an actor, I believe the appropriate forum is the court. And so when we challenged ICE's behavior, DA Ryan and myself and some others filed a preliminary injunction and a request for declaratory relief in federal district court, and that was granted. We're very excited. We're waiting for the determination on the declaratory judgment. Just like here, when this judge exceeded his limited authority, we filed an emergency petition. And we are really, you know, happy that Justice Gaziano, you know, cited case law dating back to the 19th century saying, nope, you can't do that. We are aware, I mean, I read the newspaper, I'm aware that some complaints have been filed against him, but I'm not going to be involved in those at all.
So, you know, there's been speculation from the beginning of this that the judge was essentially pushing back on your larger reform agenda rather than just on these sort of discrete decisions you were making in the courtroom that day. So given this finding, is this a vindication of your general approach to reform in the criminal justice system?
Well, what's really interesting is not that I need the validation of the people that came before me, but I find it really funny that no one questioned prosecutorial discretion when, A, it benefits them, right, number one, and number two, when it was moving toward, you know, significant wealth and race-based disparities, mass incarceration and all these other things across the country, and in some of those instances in the Commonwealth as well. But now that we have people getting elected that have a different view of the system and how we're going to allocate our limited resources, now all of a sudden people are, you know, outraged that we're using discretion that my predecessors dating back to 1807, all the other 15 DAs before me used every single day. So, yeah, I mean, I don't think he, I can't speculate. I'm confident he does not agree with what I proposed as a candidate and what the people of Suffolk County voted me in twice to do. So, but I have a mandate, and I'm an elected official. He's appointed. I think it was particularly egregious because his one opinion does not trump what the people of Suffolk County have made it clear they want and deserve.
So, DA Rollins, there has been this wave of elections around the country of what one might call progressive prosecutors who are seeking reform. We had journalist and author Emily Bazelon on last week. I think you know her or have some past history with her.
I do.
She pointed to incidents in Florida and Pennsylvania and says that we're seeing similar reactions to what you experienced nationally.
We're seeing these arguments play out around the country. The voters pick a reform-minded prosecutor, and then the system tries to prevent that person from making change.
You know, you've referred in the past to being in touch with other recently elected progressive prosecutors. You know, are you guys sharing information about similar experiences across the country? Is there a general pushback to these reforms that we're seeing consistently?
Absolutely, yeah. And what they try to do is pit us against law enforcement or say that we, you know, don't care about law enforcement, but it couldn't be farther from the truth. I mean, what I want to focus on is of these 36 arrests that got us here today, just talking, 8 of them immediately we arraigned because they were violent or serious crimes, more serious than the disturbing the peace or the trespassing or the other generically or generally nonviolent matters that people could either get a civil infraction for or do some community service, depending on what their criminal background is or, you know, a little bit more information that we might have. But we're seeing across the country that in Philadelphia, for example, with DA Krasner, the legislature is trying to take control exclusively in Philadelphia, not in Pennsylvania, across the state or the Commonwealth, but just in Larry's jurisdiction, they want to take away certain powers to prosecute gun crimes. We see in Florida with Aramis, who's my counterpart in a section of Florida, where she was talking about the death penalty and what her position was going to be there. We see a governor trying to take away the power of her, you know, jurisdiction over death penalty cases. And what we've seen here is with me, you know, before I even took office, a National Police Association filing a complaint against my bar license, the Boston Police Patrolmen's Association making blanket statements with no evidence or data supporting them, and then ironically the Boston Police coming out and showing that violent crime is down by 8% in the first 6 months of my tenure as compared to last year. And then Secretary Turco, Governor Baker, you know, all of these people that I think if you line them up and had photos of them and then a photo of me, I look very different than the people they're used to having in this position. And the people of Suffolk County are really excited about that because we don't have time for nonsense. We're moving for change. And I promised I would do it, and I always make true on my promises.
I want to invite you to respond to criticism of your choice to use sort of this reform approach in the case of the Straight Pride Parade. There has been some argument that by choosing not to prosecute in some of these cases, you may in fact be encouraging outside agitators or people who have a history of violence like Antifa members from outside to come in and cause trouble here in Boston. Here's Larry Calderone. You mentioned the Boston Police Patrolmen's Association. He's the vice president, and he was positive about Judge Sinnott's decision in the first place.
So I can go back years of former DAs looking to dismiss disorderly charges, which I'm sure we'll be reminded of. And this DA's office is doing the same thing, but the judge on the bench has taken a different position. We like that position. We think that these offenders that are here came here as agitators, here for a specific reason, here to create havoc.
Now, obviously, the Supreme Judicial Court did not like the judge's decision, but is there any merit to the concern that if one doesn't prosecute in these cases, it may invite additional outside agitation in the future?
Well, but it's not about liking or disliking, right? Like, just even listen to the language that this person's using. It doesn't matter whether I like you or not. The First Amendment applies to you. Period, end of story, right? It doesn't matter whether Justice Gaziano likes Judge whomever or not, or likes me. It's not about that. It's about hundreds of years of precedent showing that we have the right to do this. So it's great that that individual representing the Boston Police Patrolmen's Association likes what this judge says. Okay, well, that's one judge. I'd ask them to see if they can have all their cases in front of that judge. But the people of Suffolk County, and by the way, many of the individuals that that person represents don't live in Suffolk County, voted overwhelmingly for a change. And I think it shows very clearly that they aren't happy with the way things have been working for quite some time. And there are a lot of people that are invested in the system working exactly the way that it is, where people of limited means and overwhelmingly black and brown people are not winning, right? They're not getting a fair shake when they get before a judge that doesn't look like them, a prosecutor that doesn't look like them, a criminal defense attorney that doesn't look like them, a probation officer that doesn't look like them, and the police officer that arrested them might not look like them or speak their language or care, right? There's a lot of sentiment out there, and I'm excited about the fact that some of the dust-ups we've had have resulted in some really important conversations happening. And right before I started your interview, Commissioner Gross called me, and we're going to have a discussion about, I think, some of the things that I said in my press conference. But even if we don't agree, I respect him. I respect his position. I'm always going to take that call, and I'm going to, you know, listen to what it is he has to say, and I'm capable of adapting if necessary.
And that's Boston Police Commissioner William Gross you're referring to.
That is correct. And I also want you to know I did have a good conversation when I determined that we were going to appeal this with the president, actually, of the Boston Police Patrolmen's Association, not the vice president, the president, Leary, regarding what my statement was going to be, and paid him the courtesy of giving him a copy of that prior to it being released to the press. So there can be respect even when there's disagreement, and I believe that's where we are, whether it's ICE, whether it's the Boston Police Patrolmen's Association. But remember what my role is. Like, when there's an officer-involved shooting, my job is to see whether or not it was a lawful, reasonable shoot or not. We aren't friends. I have to do my job to see whether things entered into a criminal realm or not. And so the fact that, you know, people are seeming to imply that either I report to them or they report to me, or we can't do things without each other. Yes, we are inextricably tied, but we don't report to each other. We have a very good, respectful relationship, but sometimes we aren't going to agree.
We'd love to have the two of you back on to the show together sometime in the future to talk more about that relationship.
You bet. You bet.
All right. So that is Suffolk County District Attorney Rachel Rollins. Thanks so much for joining us on Radio Boston this afternoon.
You bet. Thank you so much.
Stay with us. Coming up, MIT's fundraising under new scrutiny after the weekend resignation of its Media Lab director. I'm Tiziana Deering. This is Radio Boston.